Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Family Power. Every Wednesday, I'm Dr. Billy Eisenberg.
And I'm Sheena Benjamin-Wise.
And as always, every Wednesday, 7 to 8, we have our show. We're dealing with family issues, marriage, divorce, grief counseling, parenthood, children, alimony, the good stuff in life. And Sheena, how was your week this week?
Oh, my week was hectic. But today, let's really have... You know, today's topic, the exciting discussion we're going to have later with our special guest. But do you have some topics that you, for today?
Inspiration of the day.
Yes.
I'm sure all of you listened to last night to Obama with the State of Union. And I want to let you listen for something. Just a second.
I first met Corey Remsburg, a proud Army Ranger, at Omaha Beach on the 65th anniversary of D-Day. Along with some of his fellow Rangers, he walked me through the program and the ceremony. He was a strong, impressive young man. He had an easy manner. He was sharp as a tack. And we joked around and took pictures. I told him to stay in touch. A few months later, on his 10th deployment, Corey was nearly killed by a massive roadside bomb in Afghanistan. His comrades found him in a canal, face down, underwater, shrapnel in his brain. For months, he lay in a coma. The next time I met him in the hospital, he couldn't speak. Could barely move. Over the years, endured dozens of surgeries and procedures, hours of grueling rehab every day. Even now, Corey's still blind in one eye, still struggles on his left side. But slowly, steadily, with the support of caregivers like his dad, Craig, and the community around him, Corey has grown stronger. Day by day, he's learned to speak again, stand again, and walk again. He's working toward the day when he can serve his country again. My recovery has not been easy, he says. Nothing in life that's worth anything is easy. Corey is here tonight. And like the Army he loves, like the America he serves, Sergeant First Class Corey Remsburg never gives up, and he does not quit.
It was amazing to see the soldier, and let's salute Corey and all the troopers and all. God bless America. And when I saw the soldier, you know that it's not easy when you're coming from. He came from Kandahar, Afghanistan, and he was not the only one. But something about it, he was still fighting. And the life is not easy, but you need to fight. And that was really, I was very inspired about this, and I'm sure everybody was inspired by that.
Yeah, and this really serves well to the purpose and to the focus of this particular show. I mean, this is, it's lighthearted and we joke, but it really is about, you know, supporting each other through difficult situations, and that is such an inspirational story and an inspirational young man to say, no matter what happens, you know, I am ready to stand up and do what I need to do next. And
yes.
and that's about empowerment. And,
that's empowerment.
And that, you take that on and you bring it to your families and your friends and make yourself as strong as you can possibly be.
Absolutely. And remember the sentence, because we're going to take hers immediately to our guest. Let's tell all of you, you are on the Family Power Hour. You can call us at 347-945-7246. And today's topic, maybe you're going to introduce yourself. We have a special guest.
Sure. Hi.
Who you are, dear?
I'm Josh Blyle, and I'm an attorney here in South Florida. And I work for the Ticton Law Group. And as of late, my office has been focusing on litigating foreclosures mm-hmm. and representing homeowners in foreclosure cases. I've got offices around the state, and we have about 3,500 active families that we are representing around the state in opposition to the foreclosure cases.
Wow, that's such a huge number.
It's a huge number, and do you know a statistic, if it's Florida, it's the number one with the foreclosure, the statistic compared to other states in the United States?
Yes, Florida has the highest foreclosure rate, and largely that's due to us having the third largest, well, almost the third largest, just behind Texas, population in the nation, so naturally the more population, the more foreclosures,
mm-hmm.
but also what contributed to it here, and especially in the South Florida market, was that there was a precipitous increase and then a gigantic drop in home values, where other areas of the nation had fluctuations in value, but not nearly to the extent of South Florida, in generally Florida.
Mm-hmm. Generally Florida, but I just, I was checking online, and I found out that right now, Port St. Lucie is the highest number for foreclosure. They have like 30 foreclosure every day.
Yeah, and it's very disheartening because, you know, what I see on the front line of this is that it's affecting the families. And, you know, when you read the newspaper headlines, you know, $2 billion, $3 billion in fines, those numbers are Mickey Mouse numbers. We can't fathom them as humans. But whenever I sit down with a family going through this process, or an elderly person that's now facing this biggest battle of their life at the end of their life, it really hits home. And I think that's kind of what gets lost in the dialogue. You know, you talk about the numbers, you talk about this, but really what it comes down to people.
Yeah, and I practice family law. I'm also an attorney in South Florida. And so I get one of the parties who owns the property, and they're broken and they're devastated and quite discouraged by the whole situation. And then to add the divorce on top of it creates even much more of a burden and financial overload for many of these families.
Right, and you know, look at these issues discreetly, it's not looking at the whole thing, because I hear what you're saying, and it's exactly what I see with my clients, you know, who are in a situation. And what seems to be most disheartening is that, you know, when the economy is better or the home values are not underwater, if two spouses decide to part their ways, it's easier to part their
Absolutely.
Ways. But now what I'm finding is that spouses are essentially living together as roommates because it's not financially feasible to get divorced. You know, it causes that conflict.
We're going to get to this, but
sure.
Can you explain to us what's the difference between foreclosure, underwater, and short sale?
Okay, yes. Mm-hmm. When someone's underwater, that's a pejorative term meaning that you owe more than your house is worth.
Explain.
So, well, if you have a loan against your house for $400,000, but the value of your house is $200,000, then you're $200,000 underwater.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a term that I've become using in my legal profession, but really I think the term originates from the finance industry.
Right.
Underwater, anything can be underwater. In other words,
right.
you owe more than it's worth.
Right.
And when you talk about a short sale is a mechanism that some homeowners use to divest themselves of their house. And a short sale would be a transaction where the bank agrees to take less than is owed in exchange for the property.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes there are conditions there. Oftentimes in the practice of law, like many other things, the devil's in the details. But the long and the short of a short sale is it's a way to extract yourself from there. As a litigator, I don't quite see the wisdom to a short sale because I've had clients come to me too saying, well, I short sold my house, or I want to do a short sale. And my first question to them is, if you short sale your house, where will you live?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as people, sometimes we don't see a week ahead, let alone a month ahead.
Right.
But when I ask that question to some potential clients, they look at me and say, well, I don't know. And
but it's not necessarily if you're going to file for foreclosure, you're going to stay in the house. And maybe if you're going to file for a short sale, maybe you're going to take care of the credit score. So what's the better? What's the best to do?
It's not a one-size-fits-all.
Yeah.
You know, most of my clients are interested in litigating the cases and fighting for their homes. And the way foreclosures worked, I say back in the day, but even 10 years ago, there was no real way to win a foreclosure because banks did good deals. There wasn't the predatory lending. There wasn't the push from Wall Street. And I've been litigating these cases since the inception of the foreclosure wave in 07. In fact, it was my office that unearthed the robo-signers that were filing filing false. I spent 2 years of my life flying around the country taking depositions of bank representatives that were committing perjury. Perjury. And I know when I talk about perjury, I know that, that sometimes the legislature gets involved with that in D.C.
When they say they saw the person sign it, but they were actually in another state?
In a way. That could be one form of the perjury, but the perjury we uncovered in the affidavits that were being submitted to the courts was that, for instance, a person in Oregon would be testifying that my homeowner in Florida owed $200,000, they owed $1,000 in taxes, and that they would put down these figures. And these affidavits that these individuals in Oregon were signing were what the courts were relying upon as evidence to move people out of their homes. And when I remember the first deposition very well. It was a woman by the name of Wan E. Wu. With a name like that, you almost can't forget it. But I flew to Oregon to take Wan E. Wu's deposition. People thought I was crazy 5 years ago. They said, go waste your money. But it was 2 or 3 minutes I talked to this woman where I realized, well, she swore that these figures were true. Mm-hmm. But when I asked her in person, she said, I don't know if they're true. That's mm-hmm. perjury. When you make a statement under oath that is true, when it's not true, In the non-legal field, we call it a lie, but in the law, we call it perjury.
Right. I have a question. Before going to guide, we have another guest here. She's a very good friend of mine. Can you introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Sue Selly.
And you have any question to ask the experts about foreclosure?
I actually do have a question. You mentioned predatory lending.
Yes.
And I kind of just giggled to myself as you wrote it. I actually wrote down, laugh out loud. Because, you know, when I had gone through a divorce and I was renting my home and they said, do you want to buy it? So I said, sure, because who wants to move again?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And they were going to sell it anyway. So I said to them, I'll close in 15 days. I was in New York on a business trip and I faxed everything over from the bank. They pre-approved me, yada, yada, yada. Sure enough, I closed in about, actually it was 17 days.
Mm-hmm.
When I was closing, as we all know, we go into this office, and there's a stack of papers that's mm-hmm. the size of, I don't know if anybody's religious, but you could take the New Testament, the Old Testament, a couple other testaments, and more papers to sign and more legal stuff than I knew. And while I was well aware of not to take a negative amortization loan, meaning that I just pay interest and all of a sudden I have a balloon payment and I'm really messed up,
right? Mm-hmm.
They said to me, you know, if you open up an equity line right now and a checking account and this and that,
right.
It's going to benefit you and this is really going to be key because we're going to be your bank. Well, little did I know, and I think about this as a predatory lending practice,
mm-hmm.
the home equity line I never touched until about 2 years ago. And what I didn't know is when I touched it, the money that I owed back, it starts the day you sign the papers that you have a 10-year loan, basically,
mm-hmm.
interest-free, and then ba-boom, ba-bang. Now you owe quadruple what you used to pay if
right.
you use this line. And, you know, you're trying to read through all the papers. I'm a big advocate about it's my own due diligence. But the person sitting across the table from me, I have faith in.
Right.
You know, no one ever said it was going to be easy having faith, but I had faith in the person.
Mm-hmm.
And when next thing I knew, I got a letter in the mail saying, and by the way, your home equity line, which I didn't touch for 8 years, is now, boom, up to whatever.
Mm.
I thought they got the right patsy. I must have had stupid written on my forehead. But I was really upset also in the way that it was presented to me.
What you did.
Right, and how often does it happen? Because my feeling was, since I didn't touch that line ever,
mm-hmm.
that the 10 years started from the day I touched the line. And I didn't even know about the 10 years, but just as a layperson, even thinking about it, wouldn't it start when I touched that line? And not the case.
Hmm.
How often do you see that happen and somebody being really caught kind of by you know, they're trying to pull themselves up by their bootstraps or put their big girl panties on, I always say, and having to deal with this.
More often you'd think. And it's almost one of those things, you know, that before that this was a topic that people, it was very taboo. People didn't want to talk about the financial problems they're having. But yes, what you're talking about, is that's predatory lending. And there's a phase shift in the way business was done. Back in the day, you went to a traditional bank that was incentivized to give you a real loan, that wanted to have a relationship with you. With the advent and then Wall Street got involved. And when Wall Street got involved, they figured out, how do we make money on this? So they came up with ways to take these mortgages and securitize them. And so it was a shift in the business that caused liars to be able to prosper and profit, whereas before, the liars would have been caught because there were systems and checks and balances inside the bank. More often than not, this is what I see. Very few of the clients I'm dealing with, the hundreds of thousands of homeowners, very few, if any of them, would put themselves in a position 5 years ago where they would be losing their house today. Nobody would do that. I shouldn't say nobody. Some people do. But the vast majority of homeowners were a pawn in someone else's game, just like you were. Someone else that had the financial wherewithal, that knew what the paperwork said, and you put your trust in that person to some extent, your faith in them, and that person let you down. Now, here's where it comes to the problem with the foreclosures, because those people who let you down, their operations have closed up, they've shut down shop, and they're gone. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is like the phantom menace. And a lot of these institutions that were generating these liar loans, these predatory loans, you know, there's all kind of names for them, ninja loans, no income, no document loans. Well, those companies are wrapped up and gone. So, you know, there's really no one left to be held ultimately accountable except for my homeowners that now are left holding the bag, just like you. Now you're the one that has to deal with the problem.
Josh.
Yeah.
So what tips would you give someone who might be getting ready to go to a closing and to kind of keep their eyes open to keep themselves from getting into some kind of trouble?
He's going to answer the question because we need to go to break. So what is your question again, please? Are you going to have time to think?
Some tips. I'm going to closing.
Yeah. We will right back after this commercial.
Sunday evenings at 7 o'clock Eastern, tune in to RightStream Radio Network for Just Believe with author and metaphysician Lisa Tarvis. Lisa interviews experts in the areas of health and wellness, alternative healing, paranormal phenomena, intuitive guidance, and positive living. With her own inimitable down-to-earth style, Lisa makes both guests and callers welcome and appreciated. Just Believe with Lisa Tarvis, Sunday evenings at 7 o'clock Eastern, 6 Central, here on the RightStream Radio Network.
All right, here we are. Good evening. We're back, Family Power Hour, a weekly show every Wednesday, 7 to 8, on the RightStream Family Power. And you can call us 347-945-7246.
Right.
And I'm Dr. Eisenberg. I'm a clinical psychologist here in Florida, and you can reach me in 561-271-7106.
And I'm Sheena Ledger-Wise, family law attorney, where you can reach me at 954-783-9737. And we're here tonight with Josh Biles.
Blyle.
You're here tonight with Josh Blyle, and also another guest is Sue Selly. And tonight we're talking about foreclosures and all of that that's involved, from the time of closing, predatory lending that might be out there, to litigation that happens with Josh by your side. So if you have any questions or have experiences that you want to share with us, again, please call us at 347-945-7246. And at the end of the last segment, I left the question out open for Mr. Josh to let us know.
Oh, well, one thing I guess I'm happy to say is that the kind of loans that were done in those 7 and 08 advent of the market, those loans are no longer there.
Good.
The adjustable rate mortgage still exists, yeah. But anyone that's educated or been looking at the news knows, stay away from adjustable rate mortgages.
Right.
So and also the lending standards of these banks have now come back. You know, it's taken us a while to heal. The problem with the foreclosures is it's kind of like the snake that ate a large elephant. This is going to pass. The good part is the loans that are coming out now are not nearly as toxic or problematic as the ones from the height of the market in 06, 07, and 08. So those loans, you're not going to see them so much. Also, what the federal government did is they made new requirements to make the disclosures a little bit easier. Just like we were talking, you get these stacks of paperwork, and someone's not a financial person, or someone's not a lawyer, it's gobbledygook. You don't know what you're reading. Even if you were to read it, it wouldn't make any
right.
sense.
Mm-hmm.
So the federal government has kind of cracked down on this, in my opinion, too little too late, but at least it's going to help the generations coming forward. Know what you're getting into. Talk to people around you. Buying a house, it's a big life changer. And oftentimes what I see is people kind of get wrapped up in the moment of buying the house. And you've got to take a step back and realize you're making a big commitment here. So ask those around you, whether it's your friends, your family, your loved ones. And then it doesn't hurt. An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of pain, whatever you want to say there. Sometimes people are hesitant to come to a lawyer. But if you've got questions about your paperwork, a lawyer's going to be able to review this paperwork for you for a nominal charge. It gives you the peace of mind. Now you've got a professional there. That's where a little bit of a forethought is going to save you a lot of pain in the back. But it's a slow process, and let it be a slow process. Don't be rushed into it. If it doesn't feel right, it doesn't feel right. A lot of times what I talk to my clients about, whether it's in a foreclosure or other situation, is we're animals. If your gut tells you it's not right, trust your gut. So many times we discount our instincts, but we are animals. We have instincts. Trust your instincts.
It is every
topic.
That's a big
tip. Trust your gut.
It's every topic. We have a caller, so. Sorry. Good evening.
Good evening.
Can listen? Yes. What is your name, dear?
My name's Tim.
Yes, Tim, and your question.
Yeah, my question is, I think I may have one of those bad loans. I was thinking about a strategic default. What's that, and what are my rights?
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Good question, Tim, and this is something I counsel clients about a lot, too. Similar to what a short sale is. Let's get the term of what a strategic default is. A strategic default is when someone that has the ability to pay the mortgage makes a decision not to pay. In the end, it results in the same thing. If you're defaulted on your mortgage, it allows the bank to bring a lawsuit against you. But a strategic default is someone that has the financial wherewithal to pay the mortgage but's making a decision not to. As a lawyer, it doesn't so much matter to me how a person came into default. A strategic default is something that sometimes gets a bad rap. But as a lawyer, sometimes a contract is meant to be broken. And so, like we were talking about the underwater before, if a homeowner owes $400,000 on a house that's worth $200,000, they may make the conscientious decision, hey, I'm not going to pay my mortgage because I'm never going to see the end.
Mm-hmm.
So what would happen if you strategically default, the same thing would happen. You go through a foreclosure process here in Florida where you'd have paperwork served on you, and then you would be able to defend yourself in court. One other thing Tim tapped on that I want to get to is that he talked about, he said something about believing he had one of these predatory loans.
Mm-hmm.
There are operations out there, and another thing is called loan auditors. It's kind of a cottage industry that's built up around this foreclosure litigation. There are companies out there that are loan auditors. Some of them are good, some of them aren't. It's just like a mechanic. But some of these companies will actually take your loan documents and analyze them for you and give you an opinion as to whether there was something predatory that went wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Simply having a predatory loan does not mean that you're going to be able to win your house or do things. But again, kind of like when you're buying a house, the more information you have, the better off you're going to be. So if you think you have one of these predatory loans, you can either go to a lawyer and say, hey, what's happening here? And if you're not comfortable going to a lawyer, find a reputable company. There are a lot of them out there that are not reputable. They're a reputable company that go through those documents that look like gobbledygook and say, here's where they've inflated your income, or here's where they, being the bank, inaccurately attributed more rental income to your income than they could. It gives you information, and information's power.
And Josh, it's not just any lawyer that they should consult, right? We as lawyers, we specialize in different areas. We focus on different areas. I think it's specific to go to a particular lawyer, right?
Yes, that's a very good thing to point out. And I kind of talk about that. In my mind, I figure you're going to go to a qualified lawyer. Something also that's happened with the amount of foreclosures that have been filed around the country, specifically in Florida, a lot of lawyers have kind of recreated themselves to be foreclosure specialists. Do your homework, do your research. When I'm talking to clients about going to see lawyers, I say you've got to kind of evaluate it as how you see your doctor. At the Tipton Law Group, this is what we do. This is our business. We're
mm-hmm.
we're adept in this. We just didn't kind of we're not Johnny come lately to the scene on this. But
how many years did you say you've been doing this?
I've been doing this for 8 or 9 years since I think, since early 07, right,
and
when
Peter,
everything started.
Yeah, and I think Peter did it so many years. I mean, everything.
Right,
yeah,
right. And,
yeah,
and the namesake
yeah.
of my firm
yeah.
and the senior litigator,
yeah.
Peter Tipton,
yeah.
he'd done this. And when
yeah.
we got into this area of litigation and foreclosure, we got into it with the aim of winning. And there are some attorneys out there that have the idea, well, these cases are not winnable, or we're simply delaying the inevitable.
Mm-hmm.
If you get to a lawyer like that, I really think it's a disservice.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Tim, did you answer your question?
Tim.
Oh, he's not. Well, I hope we answered the question. And just, can you give us, before we're going to go to Susie, can you give us one success story?
Yes.
One.
A number of success stories.
Well, just a subtle one. Yeah.
Here's one success story. A lot of times what the bank will do, being the plaintiff and the protagonist on a lawsuit, they will drag their feet and drag their feet. What's happening lately in Florida and around the country is the courts are becoming more of an activist court, and they're pushing these cases forward. Well, the reason that the banks don't want to prosecute a lot of these cases is that when you go to an accomplished attorney that knows these things, the bank can't prove their case. They either don't have the right paperwork or they can't get the right documents and evidence. As a lawyer, you've got to go through these certain things. You just can't, of course, not going to make a decision based upon what someone thinks. It has to be evidence.
Right.
And what happens is the way that these banks have kept their paperwork, they can't get the evidence in. So what happens is when we go to a trial and you have an attorney that understands these concepts of evidence, the litigation aspect of it, what happens is the bank can't get their evidence in. Well, if you don't get your evidence in, you don't have a case.
Right.
And I've got a number of cases where my attorneys have gone to court and the bank's inability to get documents into their case, we win. And it's almost axiomatic. It's not as if I've got some magic sauce here. It's just that if you go to the kind of lawyer that's incentivized to fight, knows what they're doing, that's why you need to go to a lawyer that has credentials. And don't be afraid to ask those questions. You know, when we go to a doctor, we ask the doctor, what your clients are doing, what's your rate? You go online and search. You need to do the same thing with a lawyer. And again,
absolutely.
Trusting your gut. If you're sitting across from a lawyer and you don't have that warm and fuzzy feeling, you shouldn't be there.
Yeah, it's great.
Right.
So you're listening to Family Power. I forget to mention that we have a Facebook page. So Family Power, go to our Facebook page, and you can listen to all the show for the archive. And, you know, I remember that last week was Lori for the Wheelchair.
Lori DuBose.
And mm-hmm. she was talking about how the emotion to be a homeowner. So it's do the homework before you're buying the home, and then maybe you don't need you to do foreclosure.
Right. Lori will make sure you don't get there. But if you miss Lori, you end up, she'll be there for the rescue.
Can you your email, your website? And we have
contact
very, very catchy website.
Sure.
Yes.
The website is legalbrains.com.
All right.
Legalbrains.com. And Susie, you have a question.
Yeah, it's kind of a question and a comment. It's funny that you mentioned, I really like that you mentioned this, Josh. You said, like, you know, the banks basically don't have the evidence when they're going to court.
Right.
You know,
right.
And what's really funny and what happened to me was, but I won't mention the bank's name.
Okay.
Bank X.
Please do.
No. They'll come after me. Bank X sold out to Bank Y during this craziness of time. And when I first went to Bank X, I considered taking an equity line with them.
Mm-hmm.
And it was only because I was opening up a business account with the person that had my mortgage.
Okay.
So it actually wasn't the day of closing. I was not thinking exactly how it happened. However, Bank X wanted too much. It was too complicated. So I said, forget it. I don't want it. Forget it. Well, they were bought out by Bank Y, and they said that I had taken it, which I never did. And then Bank Y sued me that I hadn't proved that I had homeowners insurance.
Can they prove that you took it? I mean, that's the, I don't understand.
Yeah, I had to go to the bank, and I had to research it, and it was on my credit report.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, here I had, like, over 800, and now it was down to 76, you know, all these things, and they took care of it. And don't you know, 2 years later again, it pops back up again, because Bank Y, that bought out the bank, still didn't have all their paperwork in order because they were dealing with hundreds of thousands of homeowners. So that was just a little bit crazy, and that's how the paperwork, it's so apparent to me how crazy that is. And the second thing was that you said to go to a loan auditor. I did my homework. I knew what kind of loan I was getting. Mm-hmm. I knew I didn't want negative amortization. My first house was a variable rate.
Uh-huh.
However, it was low. We knew we could, you know,
keep up with it.
And we knew that in 5 years, it was going to be we knew what the consequences were and what we were going to be doing.
What
blah,
is
blah,
the question
blah.
There?
But the loan auditors,
uh-huh.
you brought them up. Is that kind of like a forensic accountant? They go back and they do that kind of thing with the numbers for your loan, or is it, what's the difference between a forensic accounting and a loan auditor? Because they're both, to me, financial going back professionally to look at what was done with the numbers.
Kind of. When I think about a forensic auditor, and I'm sure you've dealt with this in the practice too, a lot of what a forensic auditor is doing is they're looking for the fraud. So
right.
they're going to go through someone's business
yeah.
books
yeah.
and
okay.
see what's happening here. Are you really making right payments? Where a loan auditor is going to be looking at your documents from the closing, saying, okay, was there something that went wrong in the closing here? You know, was your income inflated? And a lot of times when you would apply for the loan, you'd file a loan application either by hand or you'd be giving information to someone over the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And many of my homeowners, now they would have not done this, but they believed that the person to whom they were giving the information to on the phone was going to put that information down accurately in the application. And so when it came time for the closing, my homeowners had no reason to look at the loan application. They told the person on the phone how much they made, but now, 5-6 years later, when they're in foreclosure, they look at it and the paperwork and they say, I didn't make $60,000. I only made $30,000. So what happened is, unbeknownst to them, someone changed the numbers in the application to have their loan go through and meet the underwriting requirements. So loan auditor is going to be able to look at those things and say, okay, what information did you give and what's actually on your application? And was the interest rate accurately disclosed to you? Was it not disclosed accurately to you? So that's what a loan auditor is going to do. And I say that be careful who you work with a loan auditor, because just like in any other industry, you've got some that are good and some that are not. Do your homework. But it's similar to a forensic auditor. But a forensic auditor is more looking for the fraud in the business.
Fraud.
This is kind of saying, hey, what was in your paperwork? And it helps you adjust those complex real estate papers that at the closing you had no idea what they read. Someone's going to actually distill those for you.
So it was tip number two. Wow.
Great question and great answer.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Let's go to the caller before we're going to go to break.
Okay. Once again, you're listening to the Family Power Hour, and tonight we are talking about foreclosure. You can call 347-945-7246, and we're going to a caller now. And hello, you're on the air. Do you have a question for our guest?
I do. My house is currently in foreclosure, and I received a letter from the bank's attorney offering a waiver of deficiency. Can you explain what that means?
A waiver of deficiency.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. So I'm glad we set out some basic definitions in the beginning.
Yeah.
let's go back to the example of the $400,000 you owe in the house, but the house is worth $200,000. Similar to a deed in lieu or a short sale, what would happen is waiving the deficiency means that the bank would forgive that amount which is owed in excess of the value of the property. In other words, the bank would essentially be forgiving the $200,000 you owe. That's what a waiver of the deficiency would be. But when you're dealing with a waiver of deficiency, you've got to look at the financial aspects too, because income can be attributed to either money you make or absolution of debt. And so for that $200,000 that's being waived, that is a taxable consequence because it counts as income.
Right.
So you've got to get your tax person, your financial advisor in here, because a waiver deficiency, the population, the general public thinks, oh, great, I'm getting my deficiency waived. But then what happens is you get hit with a 1099 from the federal government that says, oh, by the way, now you need to pay taxes on that. So what you may be doing is trading one little problem for a much bigger problem. This is where you need to be guided through the process.
Right.
And if it's a decision you're making with knowledge, that's okay. What's most disturbing to me are homeowners that latch on and say, oh, I'm getting my deficiency waived. And when it comes down to it, personally, I would rather owe money to the bank than the government.
Right.
And there's some reasons for that. Because if you owe money to the bank, ultimately you have the opportunity to discharge that through bankruptcy. But if you owe money to the government, you're not going to discharge that obligation through bankruptcy. So it's one of those things where we, and some of these terms and some of these words are thrown around the public so much now that you've really got to think about what does it mean and ask someone what it really means, not what someone thinks it means.
So either ask your attorney or your CPA or accountant before you actually execute a waiver of deficiency.
Yeah. Right, and here's also what happens. This is cut to the chase. What happens is, and I mean chase, not to chase the bank.
Yeah.
what happens to homeowners is they receive these packets through FedEx, and there'll be these packets that are nicely produced on nice letterhead and says, here, we want you to sign these paperwork and mail it back
friends.
To us within 48 hours. And you know, these are the kind of letters people get. Your lawyer is going to tell you this. Anytime someone says, sign this and mail it back within 24, 48 hours, that's a red flag.
Mm-hmm.
That is a red flag. That is someone that's trying to take advantage of your position and take advantage of the power they believe they have over you. If it's good for 48 hours as a business deal, there's no reason it wouldn't be good in a week later. And if anybody says, sign it in 48 hours and give it back, don't fall victim to the urgency. Waivers are something to be very, very, they're very delicate things. You've got to get your advisors in on this. Again, an ounce of prevention.
It was a great tip. So did you answer your question, dear?
He did. I also have another one. I have an HOA, and I'm current on my HOA payments, but I received a letter from my HOA requesting that I pay their attorney's fees for filing something in the foreclosure suit, and I wanted to know if that's something I have to pay.
Okay, and I'm getting. You didn't give me these details, but I'm going to add that in here. Just tell me if I'm wrong. It sounds like you're in active foreclosure, and your HOA now sent you a bill for the HOA Homeowners Association's attorney. Is that where we're at?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Really, what you're going to need to do on this one is look at your association documents. Again, back in the day, the association was not able to charge homeowners in Florida directly. They were only able to lien the property. So if you racked up a bill as a homeowner in Florida in the past, the association could only look to the real estate, i.e. the dirt, to satisfy that debt. Now in the advent of the foreclosure, many of the associations, whether it's a neighborhood or a master association, have altered their documents where the debt owed to the association does not tie to the property but rather ties to the person. So if that happens, your association may have a legitimate basis to charge you for those fees. What happens, though, is more often than not, this is a situation where homeowners don't know their rights. They don't know their facts. And quite frankly, a lot of times you get that threatening letter, you figure, hey, I'm just going to cut the check and write the check. So what happens is the association may not have the legal right to push those fees to you, but if you cut the check to the association, they're not going to turn it away.
Yeah.
So again, it's one of those things you want to look at your association bylaws. You want to see what's happening in your association, and if you've got any question about it, take it to a lawyer, because if it's a charge that shouldn't be attributed to you, it shouldn't be attributed to you. The association has a way to pay their own lawyer, and it shouldn't be out of your pocket. But it's one of those things, the law is kind of in a state of flux right now, so look before you leap.
Do you have a good lawyer? Are you there? I'm asking, don't mention name, but do you have a good lawyer?
I do, thank you.
Okay. I just want you to listen to something. It's going to be very good for you. You have a new service that people can call and email you about questions. Ask the lawyer. So maybe this lady needs information, and she can ask the
Yes, there's another website we have. It's called AskLegalBrains.com, where you can go on and submit a question. And right now, I can only answer those questions in the state of Florida, but if you're in the state of Florida and you have a legal question, all you need to provide is your name and your zip code, and within 48 hours, you'll have a real lawyer answering your question. And if
awesome.
It's a question of which I can't answer, I know enough lawyers that are assisting with doing that. So it's a way to get your legal questions answered with anonymity, but also confidence.
Good luck to you, and all the best, and you have all the information, and go and ask the legal expert. Yes, the legal expert. Good evening, dear.
Thank you. What was that website again for the question?
Yes. What do you say?
The website question.
What was the website again for the question?
AskLegalBrains.com. Very similar to my firm's website with Legal Brains, but AskLegalBrains.com.
Let me repeat. AskLegalBrains.com. And use this and ask all the questions and do the right thing for you and all the best for you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So before we need to go to the break.
All right.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I forgot.
And we'll be right back. Once again, you're listening to the Family Power Hour. Please call in with your questions at 347-945-7246 right after these messages.
Monday afternoons at 1 o'clock Eastern on the Right Stream Radio Network. Tune in to Military Monday with host John D. Gresham, author, military historian, and journalist. John delves into a unique aspect of U.S. military history, as well as current events and issues affecting our men and women in uniform. Featuring exceptional guests, military experts, and authors, Military Monday with John D. Gresham entertains, informs, and encourages listeners to support those who put it all on the line for freedom. Military Monday with John D. Gresham. Monday afternoons at 1 o'clock Eastern on the Right Stream Radio Network. Tuesday afternoons at 1 o'clock Eastern on the Right Stream Radio Network. Tune in to host Daria Ann for Right Stream Tuesday. Daria Ann interviews talented authors in a variety of literary genres, from urban fantasy and historical romance to autobiography and science fiction. Right Stream Tuesday celebrates the creativity that flows through every author. It also delves into the all-important publishing and marketing aspects of writing, including the benefits and pitfalls of independent publishing versus traditional publishing, and how to effectively use social media for success. Right Stream Tuesday with Daria Ann. Tuesday afternoons at 1 o'clock Eastern on the Right Stream Radio Network.
And here we are again every Wednesday, 7 to 8, Family Power Hour. And please go to our Facebook page, Family Power, and you can listen to all the last show from the archive. And again, I'm your host, Dr. Billy Eisenberg. I'm clinical psychologist and family therapist, 561-271-7106.
And you can also tweet her at Dr. Billy E with her last name E. And I'm Sheena Benjamin Wise, your family law attorney. You can reach me at 954-783-9737. And you can tweet me as well at SB Wise Law.
And, you know, when you're losing your house and when you're facing your foreclosure, and sometimes people get into divorce, so they need to call you just because you're going to save them. You know, that's before, I mean,
just one of them.
Yeah.
No.
But
I do know that when you're facing foreclosure and you're facing these difficult legal situations, you know, I find a lot of people shut down and kind of close their world and hope that when they open their eyes, it goes away magically. And either, you know, seek the assistance of somebody who can really hear you and talk to you, get you through it emotionally, and with the professionals that will help you legally through the process. I think that is huge and very important.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know that you're listening to there. I have a new patient, and he's listening to the show right now. And last week he was rushing to the hospital because we think it is a heart attack because he was so upset, so nervous. It wasn't a heart attack. Thank God for this. But he's losing the house. He's losing his career. No money. And right now they don't know if maybe they're going to get divorced. And I said, just listen. And you have all the information before you just breaking up. And that's why I said, listen to the Corey, the soldier. He's fighting for his life. Not everything, it's no solution. You can find a solution.
I find that a lot in my practice is sometimes, you know, that put their head in the sand situation and just hope, you know, it gets better. Do you find that as well?
I find the same thing. And as someone that can actually help, just like in your practice, you know, I'm thinking to myself, if you only would have come in sooner.
Right.
And, you know, sometimes we as humans naturally procrastinate. And what I've also found, too, is that this is not something, you know, I talked earlier about how the foreclosures used to be so taboo. But I bet you if you talk to your neighbors, someone, they know someone that's going through this. And if you reach out to people that have love in their hearts for you, that can guide you through this legal process, you know you're not alone. And that's what I see just so disheartening. So many people face this, whether it's a divorce or whether it's a foreclosure crisis, on their own. when all they need to do is reach out. Reach out. We as professionals are here.
And this is my question, you know, because you know when you start paying your mortgage. It's not come overnight. And you know when you're going to start to get all the letter by mail that something's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
What's the right thing to do when you get the first letter?
Take action.
Meaning?
Take action. When you get that first letter, or it might even be before you get the first letter, you might realize that the path that I'm on as a homeowner, I can't sustain this anymore. And it's very disheartening when I talk to clients that have borrowed against the 401k, borrowed from friends and family, and their problem's not solved. They're on this path and they don't know how to get off it. But but when you get that foreclosure letter, the thing to do is reach out to professionals. Some will say call your bank. In my mind, that's pretty much putting your faith in the person that's going to take your house. If the banks were incentivized to help people, we wouldn't be here talking about the foreclosure crisis. We'd be talking about much happier things.
So don't call the bank.
Call the bank. Know that these people are not your friends. They make more money when they foreclose. If the banks made more money helping people, they would help people. They make more money foreclosing. And so you've got to do something. Reach out to professionals. Come to my office. Come to the Tipton Law Group. Find out what your options are. And then at least you're making an educated decision as opposed to having someone else make the decision for you. Inaction is a decision not to act.
Right.
And that's the worst thing. You're just letting your whim go, and someone else is not controlling your life.
So you what is it? And again, it's a tip number three. When you find out that taking money from your family is not helping you, don't call the bank. Call a professional.
Call a professional.
Yeah, and just take an action. We have another. We have another.
We have a caller.
Get it. Good evening. Yes, you have a question for our guest.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, loud and clear.
Hi, my name is Hanan, and I have a question to Josh. Hi, Josh. Good evening to you guys.
Good evening.
Quick question. You mentioned before that basically when the banks foreclose on a property, they're cutting the loss and the understanding this is what it is, and sometimes the waiving, the balance, et cetera, et cetera. I'm coming from a different point, which is a different attitude. Let's say a person that is standing and is paying his mortgage on time and everything is good. Can he negotiate with the bank to reduce the premium and close by paying off the mortgage? Let's see if the money on the property, on the mortgage, let's say $60,000, can he go to the bank and say, you know, guys, I don't want to continue paying for the next 20 years. I'm willing to pay you guys $50,000. Let's close it without the foreclosure process. Is that heard of? Is that exist in the industry?
And what do you mean that it's the house before it's going to foreclosure, or just you're talking about the mortgage?
Before it's going to foreclosure.
Oh, okay.
Yes. And then from a practical standpoint, you can call the bank and ask for help. But also from the practical standpoint, the bank's not in really a position to give you a discount on your loan. What has happened in the past and is still happening, and this is something I'm going to address straight on also. When you call the bank in that kind of a situation, a lot of times what the bank would say is, you know what, I can't help you, but you need to go delinquent on your loan. Go delinquent on your loan, and I'll be able to work with you. That is a slippery slope because the bank is telling you to go delinquent on your loan so they will, quote, unquote, work with you. Well, then what happens, you go delinquent on your loan, your credit gets dinged, you're now a month late, you call the bank, and they say, oh, well, let me transfer you to somebody else.
Right.
And then so you don't make the second month payment, you don't make the third month payment. So from a practical standpoint, you can call and negotiate that debt just like any other debt. But you've got to be wise to these things. The banks do not necessarily have your best interest at heart. And also the bank's going to say, well, you're paying your mortgage. Why should I give you a discount? You know, so it's not impossible, but it's impractical.
I see. Because I'm coming from a place that I know that in some countries overseas, when the term of the mortgage coming toward the end and there is certain balance, sometimes the bank looking to close some of the mortgages by offering discounts on the premium just to close the mortgage and make everybody happy. Something like that exists in the U.S. also.
Pay early and pay off the loan early and get a discount.
But you mean just no prepayment?
Yes, you can. And I'm using my own mortgage payment as an example. I can make additional payments that will go towards the principal of my mortgage. But when you're talking about a lump sum payment, that's not
right.
Necessarily very practical. And also what's happened, too, it's kind of a phase shift in the industry. it's very rare these days that you're going to call the bank that owns your mortgage. What most of the mortgages, conventional, non-conventional, are in mortgage-backed securities. And the way the industry has changed is that there's now loan servicers. One of the most popular ones right now is Ocwen. So you're going to call Ocwen, who's a loan servicer that's acting on behalf of an ultimate investor. And Ocwen's not really in a position to make much of a decision at all. So, you know, it's hard to find an ultimate decision maker. And that's what I found with my clients. Because similarly, I have some clients in foreclosure litigation that are actively being foreclosed against that say, hey, I want to make a lump sum payoff. And you'd think it would be so easy for the bank to say, yeah, I want to take a lump sum payoff, even payment in full. It's hard to get a number. So part of the practical problem is it's hard to get a decision maker. And oftentimes you're dealing with low-level decision makers, and their decisions at Ocwen or other servicers is not to make a decision. And so it's practically hard to have happen. But not impossible. It's just practically difficult.
All right.
Thank you so much for the info, and have a good guys. Have a good night, guys.
Thank you so much. Have a very good evening. I have a question. You know, in Florida, you have a homestead.
Right.
Let's say that I have my homestead. I took a mortgage. I can't pay the mortgage. What's the law to stay in Florida? So it doesn't matter if it's a homestead or not?
Right. And what we're getting at is, for instance, if someone had a money judgment against you, let's say something outrageous, for $20 million, they could put that judgment against your house. But what would happen is that judgment creditor could not force you to sell your homestead property in Florida. The lien would still be on your house. They couldn't force you to sell it. But there's a little bit of an exception to that whenever you're dealing with mortgages. Since the mortgage is the debt of the house itself, you don't have those homestead protections. So if you default on your mortgage on a homestead property, you have no homestead protections there. Sometimes some servicers, and I don't quite understand how this happens, but some servicers look more advantageously on a person if it's their primary residence as opposed to someone's investment property. As a lawyer in the front lines, I don't see where that makes a difference, because if it's someone's rental house, a family's still going to get kicked out.
Right.
It might not be the ultimate owner of that house, but you're still kicking someone out in the street. But the homestead protections wouldn't apply when you're dealing with a mortgage.
I'm sorry. Someone just texted me a question and said, let's say I have a house, I don't have a mortgage, but I'm stopped paying for the homeowner association.
Mm-hmm.
What they can do about my property?
The homeowners association can foreclose on your property.
Absolutely.
And what's happening now is some of the associations that in the past 4 or 5 years, they've been running literally in the red. So some of the associations are more incentivized to actively pursue these accounts. I've seen and heard some horror stories where there's a dispute about a late payment and it's not paid, the fees mount, and I've seen and know of these situations where people have lost their homes for sums of money of less than $1,000.
I saw a ridiculous article about some older woman in Arizona who lost her house for some stupid amount.
And this is an interesting topic. The person that asked that question is, because we're talking about predatory loans. We're talking about bad things that were done to people. Very rarely do I see an association that's a bad actor. So when it comes down, when I'm litigating these cases for my clients, my advice across the board is pay your association. They're not the ones that put you in this problem. And from a practical standpoint, they're not to blame for your mortgage. So as long as the associations are being paid, they're happy. But it's a very precarious position not to pay your association, because they can file a lien against your property and foreclose that lien very similar to a bank. And you end up losing your property.
I have a question. When a house is in foreclosure, let's say it is a multi-unit property,
mm-hmm.
can the homeowner continue to charge rent to the tenants that reside in property that's being foreclosed?
Yes, they can. Because as long as that owner of that multiple, if they're the owner of the property. And the way it works in the law is a tenant gets some rights. In law school, they describe it as a bundle of sticks. And so you, as the homeowner of that unit, you're giving the stick of possession to that renter. And as long as you're the owner of that multi-unit condominium or multi-unit apartment building, you can charge rent. In fact, if a tenant is not paying rent to the owner of the property, that owner of the property can file eviction against them. So the foreclosure process does not inhibit or remove the tenant's requirement to pay rent.
But that's mean you're holding a house and you don't pay your mortgage and you get money for the rental. So it's ridiculous. Yeah.
It may seem inconsistent, but what happens is the landlord could then evict you, and you don't want to be in that position.
And have you heard of lawyers? I know you and anybody at your firm would never advise this, but have you heard of homeowners being advised against collecting rent in order to show the bank they don't have the ability to pay?
Well, yes, I've heard that.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? Now you're getting into a whole different animal. When you're now purposely deceiving somebody, and you're cooking your books. You know, two wrongs don't make a right. There's no right way to do the wrong thing, and eventually it's going to come to light. And now here's something in particular too, because loan modifications are also something popular, and a lot of these loans are government insured, and so when you're making false statements to the government, you don't want to be there. And it's going to come to light at some point in time. And I've heard something similar, too, because a lot of times in a foreclosure, if it's an investment property that has renters, a lot of the mortgages will permit the bank to intercept those rental payments. They're going to do that if there's a renter in there. Yes, there are lawyers out there, and I had to come to grips with this as an attorney. There are lawyers out there that are not good lawyers, just like there are good mechanics or
absolutely.
Bad mechanics. You've got to know who you're dealing with. And as a professional, the mechanics in the area, they have the reputation for the bad mechanics. Well, the judges and the other attorneys also know of the attorneys in the area that have the bad reputation.
So there's no reason not to pay your homeowners association and run your business, if it's in foreclosure, as you should.
Right.
Okay.
What happened to all the house foreclosures in South Florida? It was so many. I mean, the bank took over, and what happened to the houses?
Well, there's a number of things that happened. Partly what happened was that there was a law that was passed last June in Florida, and it was promoted as something that was going to help the banks expedite the foreclosure process. What it did is it put hurdles and hoops that the bank had to get over and through, and they're having a hard time doing that. So what happened was there was a slowdown in the foreclosure filings. That allowed the market to recover a little bit. Also, what has happened is the home values in Florida, as in around the
Yay.
Country, they've come up.
Yay.
And I'm happy to say that. As a foreclosure attorney, I want to see good things happening for people. It hurts my business, but it's good for the economy. It's good for people. So as the values have risen, there's less incentive for people to go into foreclosure because they're now in a position where they're not underwater or they see that it's trending the right way. Also, what had been happening, too, is that literally hedge funds, and this has also been in the newspaper, hedge funds are buying up large bulks of these properties. I think it's a precarious position to be in because now we're going to be turning to a nation of renters. And renters, it means, you know, you don't have that stability in the community, you don't have that stability in the tax base.
But you have many percentages, you know, in every association, every building, that how many units for rental?
Right. Many associations are restricting the number of rentals. Mm-hmm. And so that's also inhibiting these investors from New York that are buying up the properties, not with the idea of flipping them, but with the idea of holding on to them and renting them. In fact, they're called REITs or real estate investment trusts. There's actually how mortgages were securitized. They're actually doing that with rental properties, where they're securitizing them and then splitting them off. Whether that's a good investment or not is yet to be seen, but that's also what's contributing to the decline of the inventory in Florida, because there just aren't that many houses right
it's
now.
It's no steal right now, but if you need to find a home, you can call Lori DeBoo. And if you have problem with your foreclosure, and you can call your firm, Legal Brain. I have no brain right now. LegalBrain.com and you can ask the LegalBrain.com. And we're not finished yet, but let me tell you that Joe's going to be here next month. He has a corner on a show. And if you have any question, you can go to Family Power Hour Facebook and ask your question. And we're sure going to answer you next month. Ask the question on Family Power Hour. And I think it's very important people know what I find here. When you know that the house is closure, don't panic. Don't call the bank. Call the expert. That's one of the things that I think we need to know. So, do you learn something about this show today, Susie?
I learned a lot.
What?
I learned that that you have to do your own due diligence. It's always up to you. Past performance is never indicative of future behavior. And just like when I choose a doctor to go to and I want to make sure they're board certified, I want to make sure someone handling something as serious as my largest purchase in my life, and thank goodness and thank God I'm not in foreclosure, but I would certainly turn to a professional and do my same due diligence, and I'm not going to take anybody at face value. Absolutely. And I appreciate you saying that.
LegalBrand.com. And something totally different. Do you know what's next Sunday?
Oh, this coming Sunday is Super Bowl Sunday.
Woo! Super Bowl Sunday. And the Romans say because of the weather, it's not going to be Super Bowl. I don't think so.
They had a quick conversation that maybe they would move Super Bowl Sunday to Super Bowl Friday because of the weather, but I think the weather is going to work out.
Yes, I hope so, because, you know, I don't think, did ever the change to Super Bowl in the United States?
No, never.
I don't
never
think
that.
No.
Like the postman.
All the fans of the Super Bowl, have fun. Let's make your team gonna win.
Yeah,
and eat a lot. And we're gonna be here next week. And what is your number, Sheena? If I want to get a voice to find you, 954-783-9737.
You can send me an email at fbwiselaw.com, or you can tweet me at fbwiselaw.
And your number, I didn't have time to write it down.
954-783-9737.
And I'm Dr. Billy Eisenberg, a clinical psychologist and family therapist. And as you know, I guarantee you start to see results after the first session. And you can reach me, 561-271-7106, and my website, DrEisenberg.com. And the tweet, I don't know, but Sheena told you. And again, go. I don't know how to tweet. But Josh going to be here next month. And please send our request for the question. You have a question, don't hesitate. Don't be shy to send us the question. And we're sure that we're going to answer. The last
very thing, special thank yous to both of you for coming out and making this show tonight a spectacular show.
Well, thank you. Have a very good day and drive safely. And thank you so much.
Okay. Did you have something else you wanted to say?
You want to say the last word? Last word is yours.
Have a great evening, everybody.
Right. Thank you. See you next month.